Now we're holding on page 62 in Chagiga, third line, middle of our siyum. We were learning yesterday about the malachim that are created and the and how from them comes Nahau Dinur, where we said in particular there are huge cohorts of malachim that become the fire of Nahau Dinur, that river of fire that we said that comes from before Hashem's throne, Kavyachol, and then pours down on the heads of the Rishoyim and Gehenim. So now continuing on that topic, Shmuel says to Chiya, the son of Rav. Now Rav, of course, was Shmuel's great colleague. He was older and great, and then he was older than Shmuel, and Shmuel showed him great respect for that and for his Torah. So now you have Chiya Bar Rav. So he tells him, Bar Uriah, or in the Gemara, it's Uriah, son of Torah, meaning your father embodied the Torah, you're his son. So I want to tell you, Ta'emalach Milsa, I want to tell you something, Mehane Milya Malyasa, to have a Omar Avucha, that your father used to say. There's this great statement in Torah that your father said, you may not know of it, I want you to know it, because after all, you're his son. Reb Shuda Gaon tells us in his Igeres that Shmuel outlived, or we know from the Gemara, that Shmuel outlived Rav. Shruta tells us in the Igeres that he outlived him by 7 years. We have all over the Gemara. For example, we have Rav Yehuda was to begin with a Talmud of Rav and then became a Talmud of Shmuel. We have many other examples where we see that Shmuel continued on Rav's work. So he says, Kol yom of yom nivroi malachei asharis min ha'ad dinur. Every day malachei asharis are created from this river of fire. Va'omrim shira, and they say shira to Hashem, or tehillim, and then they become bottle, and they disappear. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, chadoshim labakorim, new ones every morning. That means every morning there are new malachim who are going to be singing shira. Rabba munasecha, your faithfulness Hashem is great. Meaning, Maharsha says, we know Hashem renews Amchadish b'tuvah b'chol yom tovid ma'aseh bereishis, and the fact that Malachim are created every day helps strengthen our emunah in that the same way as Malachim are created every day, the same way the whole world at large is recreated every day. As we learned yesterday in Tosfos, that's what we talk about in davening, two different groups of Malachim. You have these evanescent Malachim, the ones that come and go very quickly, the ones of which we said Yotzim Ashorsim, but and then we have the one they disappear right away, and then the ones Vashem Ashorsim call them Omnim Rum Olam, the permanent Malachim who stand in the heights of the world, and they're constantly there, and they sing Shira every day. The Gemara points out a pligid of Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. Now this that Rav had said and Shmuel quoted to Rav's son, we were saying that these Malachi Asharis are created from Nahau Dinur or Pligad Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. It disagrees with how Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni puts it. The Amr Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amr Rav Yonason, called Dibur V'Dibur Sheyotzim Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every utterance, every word that comes out of Hashem's mouth, Nivrim Men Malach Echad, a Malach is created from it. Shenemar, Vidvar Hashem Shamayim Nasu, with the word of Hashem, the heavens were created, over Ruach Piv, and with the breath of his mouth, Kol Tzvam, all of their hosts were created. So Maharsha points out the simple meaning of all the hosts would be the stars and the planets and whatnot. But since instead it uses the expression Ruach Piv, then we're given to understand that here we're talking about Ruchnistika hosts, and therefore that we're talking about these Malachim that are created and then disappear. Maharsha points out that Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni also has to use the pasuk Chadoshim Labakarim. Otherwise, how would we know that these Malachim come and go, that these malachim are created and sing shira and disappear? Necessarily, he needs to be using that part of the Jerusha as well. So he's not really arguing with Rav on the essential point that there are malachim created every day and sing shira and then vanish, but he's arguing where they come from. Rav says they come from Nahau Dinur, and Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni is saying they come, so to speak, from the breath of Hashem's mouth. Okay, talking further about where we started talking about different places where the Nevi'im describe their visions of Hashem and of the Merkava and so on and so forth, and there seem to be contradictions between them, and we've been working on resolving them. So here's another one. Now you have Daniel, we mentioned before, and we're going to go into a little more detail now, that Daniel also has at one point of a vision of Hashem and his retinue of Malachim. We learned yesterday about the million and then 100 million Malachim that serve him, and then Nahau Dinur. So here's more detail. Remember one pasuk, and Daniel says that he saw Hashem sitting for judgment, levushei kislag chiver. His garments were like white, like the whiteness of snow. And the hair of his head, kavyachol, is like clean wool. So, in other words, Hashem is, so to speak, appearing as an aged person. On the other hand, you have a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Roshe Kesem Paz V'Gemma. Hashem's head, so to speak, is like an ornament of beautiful gold. Paz is a very high quality of gold. V'Gemma Shchoras Ka'orev, and then it describes, so to speak, his hair, which is black like a raven. Now, obviously, Hashem has no goof. So, as Rabbi Hanano points out over here, and the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, all of this is meant to show precisely the point that Hashem has no goof, and all it is each navi and each one is seeing him in his own way, the way that Hashem chooses to have himself perceived as is appropriate. But so, what is it? Does Hashem appear as an old person, kavyachol, or as a young one? So the answer is like Kasha, kan yeshiva, kan b'molchama. Depends when Hashem is sitting, for example, for judgment, versus going to war. And in fact, the context of the respective psukim are talking about that Daniel is depicting Hashem sitting on his throne to judge. He has the whole vision over there of the four terrifying beasts that represent the Arba Malchus, Babel, Paras Hamadai, the Yavon, and Edom, and how Hashem is going to judge and punish and destroy them. And on the other hand, the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Roshe Kesem Paz, the whole most of Shir Hashirim is talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then by Kriyas Yamsuf in particular, Hashem Kavyachol appeared as a warrior, Hashem Mishmochama, and a warrior is young. So therefore, so that's why one time he's depicted as old and white haired, and the other time as raven haired. The whole thing with the description of his clothes snow white and his hair like white wool, there's explanations in the Zohar and in Sifrei Kabbalah and in Sifrei Chassidus that white represents Chesed, and so it represents that Hashem is, so to speak, donning his garments of Chesed. He's Maslabish in the middah of Chesed to do this judgment, whereas by Kriyas Yamsuf it was more in the mode of Gvura, which is represented by black. So yeah. So to Amamar, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Ein lecha nav yeshiva el hazaken. The ideal for yeshiva is when sitting to teach Torah, or in this case to judge, is an old person. He has more experience. So therefore, so you want ideally an old person for that purpose, and therefore Hashem reveals himself to Daniel in that imagery. And on the other hand, when it comes to Mohammed, the best is a young man who's strong, and therefore Hashem shows himself in that imagery. Hashem is Mohammed, that's what we're saying. Okay. Now you have another seeming contradiction in the pasuk, and here it's between two parts of Daniel's own description. One part of Daniel's description, he says that Hashem's throne is of flames of fire, Gagiluhi Nurdalik, and the wheels of it, again, like Yechezkel saw the Merkava that has wheels, so Daniel also, so to speak, sees Hashem's throne as being on wheels. Nurdalik is blazing fire. So the implication, Korsiye, means his throne, so one throne. But then a couple of psukim later, he says, or actually earlier in the same passage, he says, Adi Chorsavon Remiv, until thrones are set up, the Atik Yomin Yisiv, and Atik Yomin Hashem, the Ancient of Days, this is where we get the expression Atik in Kabbalah, that means Pnimius Ratzon Elyon, Yisiv sat down. So what is it? Are there one throne or two? Now, the Mefoshim on the Pasuk bring over there from a Medrash that understands that the word Karsavan can mean thrones, but the word Remiv can mean set up. It can also mean thrown down. You have in the Gemara, for example, the word Roma, Resh Mem Aleph, the same Aramaic word, can mean to set down, like on a table, and it can also mean to throw. So the Mefoshim bring there, and some of them bring from a Medrash, that it refers to the thrones of these four Malchus, that Hashem is going to overthrow them and then bring them to judgment. So according to that, obviously, there's no question. Hashem has one throne, and the four Malchus have many thrones between them, and Hashem is going to overthrow them all. But here, the Gemara is taking Remiv in the sense of set up, implying that the throne is being set up and Hashem sits on it. Well, Hashem doesn't need two thrones. Now, that's according to Rashi, that's what the question is. Marsha gives an explanation that no, that's not really the question, because why does the Gemara then need to bring a contradiction between the two parts of the pasuk? And if you didn't have Daniel mentioning the throne, you could ask to begin with, why are there two thrones for Hashem? So no, what he says is the word karsavon, the vav and nun at the end of the word often means something, often mean a smaller version of something. For example, in Lashon Kodesh, we have the word ishoin, shamreni ki ishoin bas oyin. Ishoin literally means the small man, means the pupil of the eye. When you look in somebody's eye, you see a reflection of yourself in miniature. So the word vav nun, a lot of times at the end of a word in Lashon Kodesh, means a small version. So karsavon then suggests a smaller version of the throne. So what's going on over here? Hashem has his throne. What does he need? A smaller version of the throne there as well. So the answer is like Kasha Echad Loi Ve'Echad L'Dov. So the answer is the two thrones, according to Maharsha, the big throne and the small one, is for Hashem and for David respectively. Meaning, Maharsha explains, the context is, again, that Hashem is talking about, that Daniel is talking about in this vision, how he sees these four great beasts and how Hashem is going to bring them to judgment. So and the psukim after that, after it describes how they're going to be judged, and the fourth one in particular is going to be utterly destroyed, representing Edom, and the other three are like given a little while longer to survive. Then he starts describing how Ba'ruim Ananishmaya, with the clouds of heaven, Mashiach is coming. So Mashiach is from David. Therefore, Hashem is setting up a throne over here for David to sit by there, so to speak, and watch as Hashem judges and punishes these beasts and the nations that they represent. So Kidatadna, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Echad Loi Ve'Echad LeDavid Divrei Rav Akiva. Rav Akiva says the two thrones are one for Hashem and one for David. Omelot of Yosef Lili, but Rav Yosef Lili says, how could he say such a thing? Akiva Ad Mosse Ata Oisa Shechina Chol. How long are you going to make the Shekhinah mundane? You're putting a boss of Adam, David HaMelech, on the same level as Hashem, and saying they're going to sit one next to the other. Ella, now what would Rabbi Akiva answer to that? So Ben Yehoyada points out. Listen, I mean, I'll pick Kabbalah. It's a lot easier to understand. David is the fourth leg of the Merkava. It talks about in the Zohar, you have the three Abbas and David. David in particular represents the Sphira of Malchus, and in that sense, and after all, the Sphiras, at least at the level of Atzilus, so Iuvagamui Chadhu, and therefore it's not a problem to speak. We're not talking about the flesh and blood, boss of David HaMelech. We're talking about the Sphira of Malchus that he represents. Rabbi Yossi's problem with that is either because he didn't know that particular level of Kabbalah, or because he's concerned that Rabbi Akiva, the way Rabbi Akiva is phrasing it, might be misunderstood. People might think that a boss of Adam actually belongs there next to Hashem. Anyway, so Ella, rather, Rabbi Yossi really says the two thrones, or the big throne and the small throne, Echad Din ve'Echad Tzedakah. One is for Hashem's justice, and the other one for Hashem's tzedakah. Namely, there's going to be judgment and punishment for the Rishoyim, and there's going to be tzedakah for the Jewish people. So, in other words, Maharsha says the metaphor then is, so to speak, Hashem first sits on the one throne to judge, just like we had by Tekiyas Shofar. The Medrash has the expression that Hashem on Rosh Hashanah is sitting on Kisei Din, and then when we blow Shofar, then Hashem gets up from there, Kav Yochel, and sits on Kisei Rachamim, and then judges us favorably. The same way over here, first Hashem is going to sit on the Kisei Din, and then he's going to sit on the Kisei Tzedakah and do Tzedakah for the Jewish people. Okay, well, the question is, and by the way, this that we're saying over here, that Rabbi Yosef really is objecting, how can you make the Shekhinah Chol, how can you put the Shekhinah on the same level as David HaMelech, even though Rabbi Akiva, and we're saying that Rabbi Akiva changed his mind as a result of it, as the Gemara is going to say, we have an echo of that in Halacha, actually, in the Nusach of Benching. We add in the third bracha, Rachim Hashem Alekenu, Al Yisrael Amecha, Al Yushalayim Yerecha, etc. We mention our Malchus based David Mishichecha. We do not mention Hashem's kingship over there. Why not? Because it says in Shulchan Aruch, because you don't put Hashem's kingship together with the kingship of a boss of Adam, even if he's David HaMelech. In fact, it goes on to explain in Shulchan Aruch, Yesh Oimim, that for that reason, when you're saying Yalav Yavri in that bracha, that you shouldn't add Melech. You should say Kikeo Chanun Verachem Ata and leave out the word Melech, because it's the same problem. The Alter Rebbe says it's not a problem, because there you're not saying it in the same part as you mentioned in Malchus David. It's in the same bracha, but it's in a different section, so therefore that's not a problem, and in fact our Nusach has brought in Hayom Yom, and then as you see in the Siddur, is in fact that we put in the word Melech. It seems that in earlier printings of the Alter Rebbe's Siddur, in fact it was missing. The Rebbe Rashab, I think, added it based on this discussion, and that's how we say it. Anyway, so the question is, Kiblamine or like Kiblamine? Well, Rabbi Yosef really is pointing out an objection to Rabbi Akiva's drasha. Did Rabbi Akiva accept that objection and change his mind about what the two thrones are for, or did he not? Toshma, so we can prove from another, but I said the Tanya. Echad Ladin the echad the tzedakah divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says echad the din v'echad the tzedakah, which in the previous braisa is what Rabbi Yosi Haglili said. So we see that Rabbi Akiva, yes, changed his mind and accepted Rabbi Yosi Haglili's version of the explanation. Amalei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah doesn't like that either. Not a problem of Shechina Choyl, obviously, but he says Akiva, and this isn't the only place he says it. He has this expression in other places as well. Akiva Malach Etzal Agadus. What are you doing with Agadah? It's not your strong point. Kloch mi dabri secha. He says Chaver of Rabbi Akiva. You can talk to him like that. Go away from your speaking. Kloch is short for lech lecha. So stop talking in Agadah. The lech el tenegoyim va'olos, and go deal with negoyim and olos, which are complicated areas of halacha. Those are your specialty. That's where you really shine. But in Agadah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying not so much. So I don't accept your explanation. I don't accept your explanation of Agadah. In fact, Ion Yaakov says he's kind of saying to him that now the fact that in your first drosha you did like Rabbi Yosi Haglili says, and you made Shechina Choyl, you need a kapara for it. So therefore, I'll like you should be learning the going ba'ol. This is a kapara for what you were saying. Ella, kaleich, I guess is the proper. I don't know. Usually, when people learn Gemara, they usually say cloth, but yeah, one chadal. I mean cease. Yeah, chadal midbaracha, cease your words. Yeah. Yeah, finish, yeah, cease, yeah. But, so kaleich, you're right, it could be Moloshin kaleich, but I think there are Rishonim who explain that it's short for lech lecha, go away for yourself, whatever. Anyway, ela, echad lekiseh ve'echad l'shrafla. Rather, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, the two thrones, or the big throne and the small throne, are one for Hashem's own throne and one for the footstool. Kiseh le'shevolav, the throne Hashem himself is sitting on, shrafraf la'adoim raglav, and then you have the footstool, exactly, you have the ottoman, so to speak, or for Hashem to rest his feet on. Meaning, in other words, that there you go, there's the big one and there's the small one. The point of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's objection, Maharsha explains, is that, so if we say, like Maharsha said, that it's a big throne and a small throne, then Rabbi Yosi Haglili says that is saying you're making Shechina Choyl, they have to both be talking about thrones that Hashem himself is using. So echad the din ve'echad the tzedakah, but then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, what does tzedakah have to do over here? The whole point of that vision of Daniel's is the din that the Eibishter is doing for the goyish wicked nations. So it's all one din, but then you have the kiseh and the shrafraf dichtiv, as the pasuk says, koyim Hashem Hashemayim kisi va'aretz adoim raglav. The heavens are my throne and the earth is my footstool. So therefore, having a throne and a footstool there represents that Hashem is, so to speak, sitting on Shemayim and exercising judgment here on earth. So that's a picture of him on the kiseh hakavod. Yeah, Rabbi Yosi Haglili doesn't have a problem with that. He has a problem with the boss of Adam sitting next to Hashem. So that's why he says that it can't be that David HaMelech would be sitting over there. Again, as Ben Yehoyada said, we're not talking about the actual boss of Adam, David HaMelech, but rather Sfiras HaMalchus. But yeah, obviously, but still, yeah. Okay. Okay. So we've gone now through the various psukim that about the images of Hashem that the Nevi'im saw that seem to contradict one another. Now the Gemara is going to continue with more things of Ma'aseh Merkava, but first the Gemara is going to digress as follows. Before, when we were talking about the qualifications that a person needs to have to learn Ma'aseh Merkava, we said the Gemara had said that he needs to have five qualities. Sar chamishim unesu ponim yoyetz v'chacham choroshim unevoin lochash. So now, after we went through everything else that we were discussing about Ma'aseh Merkava, now the Gemara takes some time to explain that pasuk and the surrounding psukim. So you have a section over there in Sefer Yeshaya where you have many harsh nevuos that Yeshaya says about the Jewish people. The Gemara in Bava Basra points out that Sefer Yeshaya is basically kula nechemta. Most of it is nechomos for the Jewish people, but nonetheless, it does have its share of nevuos of punishment. So he also Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Yud ches klolis kill Yeshaya Hanavi Yes Yisrael. Yeshaya Hanavi cursed the Jewish people at one point with 18 curses, one after the other. But his mind wasn't set at ease. Ad she'omalahem mikrozeh, until he tells them a 19th thing following it. Namely, the pasuk says, so after it lists, the Gemara is going to soon quote the psukim and explain what the 18 things are, but he finishes off, the nigas ha'am, the people are going to be very hard-pressed, ish v'ish v'ish v're'ehu, each person against, a person against another person, a person on his friend, everybody's going to be hard-pressed to find any good or any relief. You have uhanar bazakin, the young men are going to pride themselves over the elders, v'hanikla, and the degraded banichbar are going to pride themselves over the honorable ones. So when he said that, then that put him at ease. Why would that? What is Yeshaya out to curse the Jewish people, and he has to keep on going until something puts him at ease? So Marsha explains, because here we're going to have all these things that he's going to say are all going to be things he's talking about that various great things, various great resources are going to disappear from the Jewish people. So it's a terrible thing. He's feeling very bad about that. Yes, he has to say the Nebuah, Hashem gave it to him. He has no choice but to say it. But Haytochen, what's going to happen to the Jewish people when they're missing all of these 18 things that he's going to, when all these 18 things that he's listing are going to be missing? Then he says this pasuk, and he realizes, wait a minute. When you have this kind of thing, that's one of the simonim of Ikvas and Mashiach. Well, then it means Mashiach is coming close. So therefore, we have nothing to worry about. That's one explanation. A different, other interesting explanation is that he's thinking to himself, you know, I'm spending all this time. He was the head navi of the Jewish people for like 80 years, and I'm telling them over and over to do tshuva and whatever, and nobody's paying attention. Is there something wrong with me? Then he says this part of the pasuk, and he realizes, no, it's not dvorim ayotzim min halev, but the part of the klala is just that people are not going to be paying attention to the ones they should be paying attention to. But it's two parts of the pasuk. V'nigasa am ish v'ish v'ish v're'ehu esnachta. You have v'hanar bazok and v'hanikla v'anich. The two halves of the pasuk. So it's a mistake. The comma is supposed to be before you have. So yudches klolus ma'ininu. What are these 18 klolus? And by the way, Ben Yehoyada points out there are a lot of other klolus that Yeshaya says in his sefer. Why are we singling out these? He says because the other ones are all conditioned. Im tovu shmatem, he says in Perek Aleph, if you listen to Hashem and you do what you're supposed to, tuva oretz techelu, the im tamanu merisem, only if you're rebellious and you don't want to listen, then you're going to have problems. Whereas over here, he's saying these things that the Talmud Chachamim and the various great caliber people are going to disappear from among the Jewish people, and it's not even conditional. So therefore, the Gemara is calling them clawless in that sense. So the pasuk goes like this. The Lord, the Master, Hashem Tzvakas, Mesim Yerushalayim Yehuda, is going to remove from Yerushalayim and from Yehuda. So first we'll go through the Psukim, and then first the Gemara is going to quote the Psukim as they are, and then it's going to go through phrase by phrase and explain them. So we'll translate first on the simple level. Mashein, Hashem is going to remove a support, or Mashena, and a support in the feminine, so stronger and weaker supports. B'chol mishan lechem, every support of bread, b'chol mishan moyim, and every support of water. Poshet chap means it sounds like there's going to be a famine. He continues, Gibor v'ish mochama, that Hashem is going to make disappear the mighty men and the men of war. Shofet, the judge, the navi. The koisim and the sorcerer. Now, what's the problem with sorcerers being missing? That would be a good thing. Well, that's what Gemara is going to explain soon. The zokin and the elder, sarcham, and then he continues in the next pasuk, sarchamishim, the captain of 50, unasu upon him, and the one whose face is lifted, meaning that people respect him, the yoyetz and an advisor, the chacham charoshim, and a wise man of whispered secrets. Charoshim actually of charoshim means more like a magic, but he's a wise person in hidden arts. Unavoin lochash, and somebody who understands whispered things. Then he continues in the next pasuk. Nasati na'orim sarehem. Hashem says, "I will make young men will be their princes." Where usually you don't want that, like we said before. As far as Yoshev, you want to have an elder person. So yeah, we're going to have young, inexperienced people as their leaders. The saalulim yimshulubam. And ta'alulim, where the simple meaning means like asher salalti b'mitzrayim, like mockers, like people who play around with people, are going to be ruling over them. So those are 18 things, one after the other, that he's saying of what's going to happen to the Jewish people. So now let's explain one by one what these things are. Mashein Eva Bali Mikri. The first one that he says that Hashem is going to remove the support in Loshen Zohar refers to the people who are expert in Mikra, in Tanakh. Marsha points out, because otherwise it seems repetitious. If it's saying mashin or mashena, why also mention kil mishan lechem v'chil mishan moyim? Therefore, the Gemara is understanding that each of these mashains, each of these mashains, each of these supports is talking about a different kind, a different area of Torah. So mashain eva bali mikra, mashena, the support in the feminine, means the ones who are experts in Mishnah. Kigoin Rav Yehuda ben Beseira or Tema v'Chaveira. And an example of those kinds of people who are expert in Mishnah is Rav Yehuda ben Beseira or Rav Yehuda ben Tema and his colleagues. Marsha explains, the vote is, Torah Shebechsav can be called Mash'ein in the masculine form, meaning a stronger support. A person can rely on Torah Shebechsav, and that's it. On the other hand, Mash'ein Alosh in Nekeva, because Mishnah, first of all, is like a Nekeva relative to Torah. It's a Torah Shebechsav in the Zohar, actually. In the Zohar, Torah Shebechsav is compared to the father and Torah Shebaal Peh to the mother. That's we have the expression, Shema B'ni Musar Avicha V'al Titash Torah Simecha, and it's explained that it refers respectively to Torah Shebechsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. But besides that, also, Mishnah is inherently weak in the sense that, at least from Tanakh, you know you're not going to learn halacha straight from Tanakh. So it itself is a self-contained thing. As opposed to Mishnah, we know you can't paskin halacha from the Mishnah. You need Gemara as well, and therefore Mishnah can be described with as a weak, feminine kind of support. Next. So by the way, when we're talking about the Bali Mishnah, so how much, when we say that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira or Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema were experts in Mishnayos, or Pligibar Rapapa v'Rabon, Rapapa and the Chachamim disagree, how much Mishnayos are we talking about anyway? One says that there were originally 600 Sidre Mishnah, and one says 700. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, was expert and knowledgeable in all of them. Now, what happened? How comes it that we only have six Sidorim? So one explanation is that originally, yeah, the Mishnayos were originally much more detailed than they are now. We have so many things that were relegated to Braisas that are quoted throughout Shas. We have so many things where the Amoroyim have to struggle to understand what's in the Mishnayos. So originally there were actual Sidre Mishnah that contained all those details. And then later on, because people couldn't learn that much material, then Rebbe condensed it down into Shisha Sidorim. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that originally there were six or seven Sidorim, according to the different opinions over here. We have Shisha Sidre Mishnah. There's some evidence that Rabbi Margolius mentions in one of his Sidorim that one of the Shisha Sidorim that we have was originally split up into two. Anyway, so that would make seven. Anyway, the point is, there were 100 different versions of them. We know the Mishnayos that we have are mostly the Mishnayos of Rameyah, Stam Mishnah Rameyah, but there were also Mishnayos that were taught by many of the other Chachamim. Altogether, there were 100 different versions of the six or seven Sidre Mishnah, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, was an expert in all of them. By the way, the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya, in Igeres Chofei, that since those 600 or 700 still existed in the time of Rashbi, in the time when Rashbi and Rabbi Elazar were in the cave, that's what they spent most of their time learning. The Alter Rebbe points out over there, in Igeres Chavod, rather, that can't be they spent most of their time composing the Zohar because there's not much material in there. It wouldn't have taken up the 13 years that they were there. Necessarily, they spent most of their time delving into these Mishnayos. It could be making chazara, but there's only so much chazara you can do. A Talmud Chacham is expected to come up with new things also. But an interesting thing, by the way, in Shira Masefer HaTanya, there's a footnote over there with Munkacher asked on that. Why? I mean, the same way as they could be learning Mishnayos, and as the Alter Rebbe says, being mefalful in that, they could be doing the same thing. Yeah, they could be doing the same thing with the Zohar. And the Rebbe gives an answer, the gist of which is with Nigla, you have to have a lot of questions and answers as the Alter Rebbe describes them. They wanted the Tovara in order to peel away and get at the facts. Zohar, Kabbalah, and Pnimiyas HaTorah, on the other hand, is more straightforward, less Taman like Kusha, like Piruk. There's no questions, no answers. It's just a straightforward Kabbalah, which is why we call it that. And therefore, yeah, the whole material that comprises the Zohar, they could have gone through in a couple of months. Okay. Anyway. With that said, by the way, there are Rebbes who say, I don't remember where this is brought, that the Zohar is actually only a small part of what Rav Shimon ben Yochai composed. There's something along the idea that he composed a separate medrash, which is essentially what the Zohar is, medrash on Psukim, beginning, who's in each one titled with a title beginning with a different letter of the Aleph Beis, and Zohar, which begins with Zion, is all that we have left. So according to that, there was more material, but still not necessarily enough that it would have been enough to fill up 13 years. Okay, anyway. getting back to the Pesukim, Kol Misham Lechem, when we say that Hashem is going to remove every support of bread, Eilu Bali Talmud, that refers to the people who are knowledgeable in Talmud, in the analysis of Mishnayos, to know how to, and now you can rely on them as much as you would rely on a supplier of bread that you can eat. Shanema, as the Pasuk says, the Torah personified says, L'chu lachmu b'lachmi, come eat of my bread, u'shtu b'yayin masachi, and drink of the wine that I've mixed. So we see that Torah is compared to bread, in particular Talmud, which is the main thing that a Yid needs to know in order to know what to do and what not to do. Because from Talmud, you extract the practical halachas. So therefore, it's called bread, just as bread is the mainstay of what a person lives off. B'chal lechem is related to Milchama because the abenama apumchar b'leichol, a person eats, there's a battle going on with it. But yeah, it does also include that there's Milchama shel Torah involved, sure, yeah. Next, when Yeshaya continues, Kol Mishan Moyim, that all support of water is going to disappear. What is water in this context? Now, of course, the Torah in general is compared to water, but now that we've already discussed, now that we already mentioned Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud, then what's left? So Elo Balei Agadis, this refers to the people who are experts in Agadta, and why is Agadta in this context compared to water? Because Agadta is very absorbing and it draws a person's mind and a person's attention like water. So again, Yeshaya is saying that people who are knowledgeable in that are going to disappear. Gibber, then the next pasuk continues, the mighty man, Zebal Shmois, that refers to people who know many teachings of Torah that they learned from their rabbeim. Rashi explains, Bali Shmuas means that he heard halachas psukis, established halachas from his rabbeim, and he knows them well. In other words, unlike the Bali Talmud before, who know how to analyze the Mishnayos and to be able to derive halachas from them, the Bali Shmuas are the ones who are experts in the, you know, in, to put it in modern terms, let's say they know the whole Shulchan Aruch by heart, and they can tell you over the halacha as it says in Shulchan Aruch. That would be Bali Shmuas. So they're compared to a gibber, the same way as a gibber is capable of doing heroic feats, the same way a Baal Shmur, whenever you bring up a question in halacha to him, he'll immediately know something that's relevant, he'll immediately know the relevant halacha. Another explanation is the gibber refers to people who overpower the Yetzirah. Next, Ish Milchama, the man of war, this is the one who knows how to give and take in the war of Torah. Yeah, Torah involves Mochama. There's a constant give and take. Again, you have Ilana the Tovara to go through the questions, which are the Klipas Noga, and get to the answers. So that's the Ish Mochama that Yeshaya is saying there's not going to be such ones around them. Maharsha explains the metaphor is an Ish Mochama is not a gibber. He's not naturally strong and heroic, but he knows how to fight. So he knows tactics. He knows war tactics. So the same way, this Yadea Lissa Velitin B'Mocham Deshal Torah, he may not know so many facts of Torah. He may not be such a Baal Shmua, but he has the sharpness to be able to work to fight the Mocham Deshal Torah and come to the correct conclusion. Next, Shofet, when we say that a Shofet is going to disappear, now it can't mean that all Shoftim are going to disappear. No matter what, even in the worst times, Jews always had Shoftim to judge. So it means that Dayan Shidonin Emeslam Mito. Yeshaya is saying the kind of Dayan who judges absolutely truthfully, that you're not going to find in this time that he's talking about. What is the double expression? Emeslam Mito, Tosfos discusses in a couple of places. Imagine, for example, Shidon Din Emes is exactly that he judges truthfully without bias and without anything. Emes la'amitoi would be, for example, there could be a case that comes in front of the Dayan where on the surface, everything seems to be very glatt. The Edom are saying what they're saying and everything, but the Dayan has the sixth sense, or the finfter Shulchan Aruch, and he realizes that there's something wrong with what these Edom are saying, that they're not telling all the facts or they're outright lying or whatever. A Dayan is done with Emes la'amitoi is not just going to say, okay, well, you know, the Edom said, I'm going to pass in according to what they say. If there's any problem with it, then the fault is going to lie on them. No, he works on ferreting out the Emes la'amitoi and figuring out whether what they're saying is true or not, and then doing appropriately. The Rambam, in fact, talks to the Rambam Square, has a whole perek in Hilchos Sanhedrin where he discusses this point. Me'ikra Adini says a Dayan is allowed to, and even supposed to do that, to use his gut feeling when necessary, when he realizes that something's wrong with him. He says later on, but the dinim stopped doing that because after the time of the Gemara, you can't rely on such a thing. A dayan could use that as an excuse to start injecting his own biases or whatever and say that I'm depending on my sixth sense or whatever. So that's the example of what Yishai is saying over here. Then former times you had dayanim of the caliber to be able to do that, and now we don't. Next, Novi Kamashmoy, when it says Neviim are going to disappear, means exactly what it sounds like, meaning that eventually there came a time when there's no Nevuah among the Jewish people. Koisim, what does it mean when the Pasuk mentions a Koisim, which means a magician? Now, if it just means exactly that, that's a good thing that there are no magicians among the Jewish people. Rather, Zemmelech, that refers to a king. Shenemar, as we find a Pasuk in Mishlei, Kesem al Sifse Melech, on the lips of a king is like magic. The mishpat lo yimal piv, when he judges, then his mouth never says anything wrong. In other words, like the king has almost like a supernatural ability to find out the facts, and it almost seems like he arrives at them by magic. In reality, Mephoshim explained on the pasuk what it is because he's a king, and everybody wants to be on his good side. So therefore, we have lots of people all around who are ready to bring the facts to him behind the scenes or whatever, and therefore he has information that's not available to the general public. But you see, when he judges, like by Shlomo HaMelech and the two women, for example, it almost seems like magic. Like, how could he possibly have figured that out? So therefore, a king is called Koisim. Next, Zokin, when we say an elder, Zesha Roy Leishiv Yeshiva, or the Yeshiva, means a Zokin, a Zesha Kona Chochma. So obviously, it doesn't mean there's not going to be old people among the Jewish people. It means somebody who's suitable to sit and teach in a Yeshiva, there's not going to be. Sar Chamishim, when we say a captain of 50. Now, the Gemara doesn't want to understand it in the simple sense, Marsha says, because, listen, you have, by Yisrael and Moshe, you have Sori Alofim, Sori Meyes, Sori Chamishim, Sori Asoris, so why would we all of a sudden be taking the Chamishim that's in the middle of the pack over there? So therefore, the Gemara Davshins, Al Tikri, Sar Chamishim, Al Sar Chumashim, not a captain of 50, but a captain of Chumashim. Zeshiyadeh lisavalitin behei chum sheitorda means somebody who knows how to give and take an argument in the chamisha chum sheitorda. Now, before we had at the beginning of the list, we had the Balei Mikra. Maharsha explains the difference is the Balei Mikra are baki in Tanakh, but they don't really know how to analyze it. The Sar Chumashim over here were saying they're not necessarily expert in the rest of Tanakh, but within the five Chumashim, which is after all where we learn all the halachas from, they know how to give and take and to analyze it deeply, and to understand where the halachas come from. Another explanation of it actually is that a sar chumashim would be somebody who knows how to bring proofs from one area of Torah to a completely different area. We have all the time in the Gemara, where the Gemara will be discussing, let's say, something in Dinei Mamonos, and it'll bring a proof from something in Kodshim. You have examples like that in Shailos HaTshuvos throughout history. You look sometimes, for example, in Rav Moshe's Tshuvos, for example, and you'll find that he's in the middle of discussing something in Yerideya, for example, and he'll be bringing in something from Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. So that kind of thing is another meaning of what we're saying by Sar Chumashim. Next, Dover Achos, Sar Chamishim Kid Rabba Bohu. Another explanation of Sar Chamishim is like Rabba Bohu explains the Amr Rabba Bohu, Mikan Shein Ma'amidin Turgman Alatzibur, Maturgman Alatzibur Pochas Mechamishim Shana. You shouldn't appoint that a Talmud Chacham, a Rosh Hashiva in those times usually would have a Maturgman standing in front of him to repeat out loud and more clearly everything that he's teaching to say it out loud for everybody else. You don't appoint a Maturgamon for a Rosh Yeshiva who's less than 50 years old. Well, there's a different explanation that some of Farshim have, means the Maturgamon himself should be at least 50 years old, with the idea behind that being that at 10 years old, then Esther Stronim Mishnah, and he'll have 40 years because Einonim Omin Adas Rabbi until 40 years, so that way he's at least 50, and that way he knows the Mishnayis and the Braises though. Anyway, the point is, so Sar Chamishim means that he's a Sar who is at least 50 years old. Then, Nisu Ponim, when we say someone whose face is lifted, so it doesn't just mean somebody who's respectable, that you always have, Zeshin Nosim Ponim Ladore Ba'avuri L'mayla, means somebody who Hashem shows favor to the whole generation in his schus to go into the Shanoisim Ponim Ladore Ba'avuri, that the whole generation is favored because of him. He's so great that because of him, either Hashem or Lahavdil, the kings on earth, respect the entire Jewish people because of him. L'mayla k'menor chanina mendoisa. An example of that relative to Hashem is Reb Chanina mendoisa, where you have the Gemara that in Tainus, that the whole world is supported in the schos of Chanina, and in the schos of Reb Chanina mendoisa. L'mata And down here on earth, an example is Rav Abahu, when he would visit the palace of the emperor, where the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin and in Ksubas that the women over there, in one place it says Matun Yasa, the noble women, in another place it says Amhasa, the maidservants, anyway, would come out and sing a song in his honor, welcoming him as the shining light and the guide of the Jewish people. So therefore, so in other words, the whole Jewish people were benefited, Lamata, that the emperor and his whole household respected Rabbi Abahu, and through him the Jewish people were able to get great benefits. So that's a soup on it. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, on Sunday, Be'ez Hashem, with the rest of the list. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Tesel. The pasuk says, we just actually talked about here. We just talked about the Arboim Shana Einan Moimin Al Das Rabbi. So here, actually, today's Yom Yom Mashiach Gula is about just that. When the Hashem says, Moshe Avinu says that I led you for 40 years in the desert, and Hashem hasn't given you a mind to understand until now. And Rashi explains it means you haven't been able to recognize the kindnesses of Hashem and connect to Hashem Ad Yom Hazeh, because a person doesn't fully understand his Rebbe's Das and the Chochma of his Mishnah until 40 years. Now, that means we're not just talking about a boss of a dung. It also refers to Hashem. So that means that a 40 years has to do with a higher level, a more complete recognition of Elikus. The Rebbe was saying this on Parashas Ekev, Tavshin Dalad Mem, which was 40 years since Rebbe Levi Yitzchok's Histalkus. So then he continues that this realization, this understanding will be most complete in the times of Mashiach, when the Nigla Kvod Havaya, and when also the Torah of Mashiach, which is another meaning of Rabbe, will be revealed, and then we'll understand Soif Daita, the full meaning, the full range of meaning of what Mashiach and the Chochmah of the Mishnah that he's teaching us, that we'll be able to understand it then on a whole different level. Continuing with Halachos of Shabbos. You have a handkerchief that you're going to use to blow your nose. So what do you do with it on Shabbos? How do you take it around? So the minhag is that you put it inside that you wrap it around your waist underneath the waistband of your pants, and then that way again it's serving as a belt. You would have to be careful if you do that you're not making two knots in it, because then you can't do that on Shabbos. A Yoresh Shemayim could do another thing. Instead of that, his pants are going to be held up with this thing. He also, a man might well be wearing suspenders with his pants. And in that case, what is this handkerchief accomplishing? So a Yoresh Shemayim, he says, would take off the suspenders, and that way the mitpachas, that way this handkerchief is actually serving a purpose when it's holding up that it's holding up the pants. Others instead wrap it around their neck. That would only be, for example, that would only work if, for example, you regularly wear a scarf or something like that for a cold or in cold weather. And again, you have to tie it for heter. But to wear it, for example, as a shawl around your neck, that would be an issur gomer. In the same way, to wrap it around your hand and foot would also be osur. But for example, the Altadeva adds, if you were to use, back when they didn't have, before they had elastic, you would have to hold up your sock for the garter. If instead you're going to use a handkerchief for that, then that would work. I don't know anybody nowadays who carries handkerchiefs, so I'm not sure how relevant this halacha is nowadays, but if you do, then there you have the details. Okay.